Thanks, everyone, for joining us for another episode of the Oh No Disc Golf Podcast. We are on episode 88 with my co-host, Kyle, and special guest of the night, Nova Polite. I feel like I pronounced that wrong again.
No, you got it right.
For people who don't know Nova, she is the two-time FP50 World Champion, the most winningest FPO player in the state of Kansas, and possibly, this is just, this hasn't been tested yet, the tallest FPO disc golfer in the world. So, welcome, Nova. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, glad to be here. Those are weird and obscure statistics.
Yeah, Some of them are.
Yeah, the most winningest in the state of Kansas. That's like some deep cut Statmando shit. It's like finding out the linebackers got like the most sacks on Thursday nights in the NFC North. It's like, where do these statistics come from?
Yeah, I always like those because it's like everyone can be a record holder at that point, right?
Right, yeah. So everybody's special now.
The most in the state of Kansas is pretty cool, though. Like, I would hold that in high regard because Kansas is known for disc golf, too. It's not like it's some state that doesn't have a decent amount of disc golf.
While that is true, it's like everybody comes to Kansas to play disc golf, but nobody like lives in Kansas to play disc golf. Yeah, I don't even live in Kansas. I'm like right across the border in Missouri. I live near Kansas City, and the metro splits the two sides of the state line. Right. So so when I'm playing local tournaments, half of them are in Missouri, half of them are in Kansas.
Interesting.
And there's not a lot of FPO action out here in the Great Plains, so I just tend to rack up easy wins. They don't count for anything.
Well, so would we be able to say that you might be the most winningest in Missouri as well? What are the chances that that's a state stat?
I don't know. That seems less likely because Missouri it's got Cynthia Ricciotti, whose home base is Columbia, Missouri. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there are a lot of OG FPO players from the St. Louis Metro over on the other side of the state. So I don't know. We'll have to ask Statmando.
Right. We'll look on Twitter for that.
All right.
Eric's the numbers guy of the show.
Cool.
So other than some of the obscure facts, why don't you tell us in the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Okay, well, let's see. I'm the 2X defending FP50 world champion, which means I'm over 50 years old, turning 53 this year. Started playing disc golf in the spring of 2015. Went pro by the end of that year and never looked back. And prior to that, I'd been a lifelong athlete, changing sports probably every 3 or 4 years. So I'm not like super physical. I'm not like some kind of crazy buff athlete or anything. It's just doing things was always really fun to me. And I was encouraged into it even from early childhood, partly because of the way I was raised. And so I never saw any reason to stop. And legit, it kind of solves the problem of how do you make friends as an adult? Because making friends as an adult is a real pain, but being out and doing things, well, you can make friends with the people you're playing with. So boom, there it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I found a lot of my friends here. Being a transplant from Michigan, it was so difficult to find people, especially during the pandemic. It was almost impossible.
Yeah, so, it's a double whammy.
Yeah, it was a little bit rough. But I've found a wonderful community within the disc golf place. But what was another sport that you really enjoyed besides disc golf, but like with that you had played before?
Oh, the big one I'd say was probably fencing. I did that in college. Awesome. And because I was in college for about 11 years, I fenced for a long time. But
so you're a doctor?
No.
I'm just kidding.
No, I was dealing with some things. So I left school and came back a couple of times. And when I say left school, I mean, they threw me out. But school and I were on a, you know, school and I were on a little bit of a break. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And then I went and worked in a factory full time. And I was like, you know what? I think I'd rather be back in school.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Factories are not fun work. It's not fun work.
No. Yeah. It makes you rethink your career choices real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Get you a computer job. Don't be in manufacturing.
Right. But that's cool. Fencing. I have no concept of fencing.
I'll tell you what. First off, it's not what you think. You think, like, you know, just poncy la 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 waving the little foil around. No. Yeah.
No.
Fencing is brutal. There is no part of your body that is not exhausted after a fencing match or a fencing workout, because you are using every muscle you got from your toes all the way up to the end of your fingers. And you're doing all of it in like these crazy deep thigh squats and deep hip squats, you know, very low to the ground, feet spread out, running back and forth.
It always looked like dancing to me.
Well, that's the beauty of it. That's the footwork.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, I mean, you're both equipped with a sword that is the same length. So if you want to hit somebody, or if you want to poke them and you don't want them to poke you, you got to really focus on the distance between you, and then very subtly on the sly, like maybe just move your feet a little bit and suddenly you're close enough, and then pow, you touch them. But you know, it's not just, you don't just shuffle forward and back with your feet always apart. Mm-hmm. You know, you do basically, what's the next step? You do
like this. Exactly.
You do this crossing. You do this crossover step forward and back. And I like, when I was first starting disc golf, I watched a video on the X step and I was just like, I can do that.
Right. Like, you've done that before.
Yeah. I was like, okay, cool. I'm there. Yeah.
Million times.
That's so interesting. Cross training from fencing, because I have a couple friends that are into teaching disc golf as well. Okay. So they're always kind of like re-examining how some people are just so naturally, everything just clicks. And some people, it's like 3 years and they still don't look even that good that person just picked up a random disc. But
there's a lot of that, like one-handed backhand swing in tennis is the backhand throw in disc golf. Mm-hmm. And then the baseball sidearm throw is the flick.
Right.
But so you can bring all the sport. You can bring all the sports to disc golf. Yeah, fencing is more about the footwork, really.
Sorry, that's a great tangent. I love that.
We could do that for an hour.
Oh my gosh. Eric, you on track?
Yeah. So
sorry.
After all that, let's go on to question two.
Yeah.
you've been playing in disc golf or competing in disc golf for going on 8 years now. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this will be the eighth year, I guess. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how the atmosphere surrounding the game has changed in those 8 years?
Okay. Well,
or it's seven.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Well, I'd say for about the first 5.5 to 6, it was just super chill. Whatever most people believe about disc golf being just laid back and accepting, and everybody can be their own kind of weird, and everybody's just chill on the course and everybody's cool, I'd say for about the first 5.5, 6 years, absolutely 100% spot on. That was totally the experience. And then, like, in about the last year and a half, this culture war thing around people being trans just got turbocharged. And that's kind of changed the atmosphere a little bit. It was really weird because I, a little bit of background. I transitioned 20 to 23 years ago, depending on how you want to measure when it starts or stops. And so around 2015, when I came to play disc golf, you know, I'd been living in this gender for like a decade and a half. So at that point, I was just like, you know, I signed up for the PDGA, I checked F on the box. And then, but before I entered a tournament, I went online and looked at their documents and I was like, what do they think about that? And it was just like, yeah, if you're post-surgery, you're cool. So I was like, well, if that's their rule, I'm not even going to tell them. Why, you know, I'm abiding by the rules. So whatever.
Right. If they don't ask, why bother?
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I was not living openly trans at the time because legitimately I was just kind of sick of people's shit.
Yeah, right. and you don't even have to explain it, really. You
just, yeah.
That's your decision.
Yeah, just, yeah. Because I mean, obviously during the process of transition from 2000 to 2003, everybody knew because there's no hiding that shit, you know. Right. You know, one day your name is this, the next day your name is that, and then you grow tits. Everyone's gonna be like, hey.
It's like, hey,
something
changed here. I can't put my finger on it.
Are you wearing your hair differently? You know, but after once I was done with everything, I was just like really tired of like having to justify myself everywhere I went all the time. So I was just like, I'm just gonna like stop talking about it and stop bringing it up and just sort of drift away. And that's where I was in 2015 when I joined the sport. So I checked F on the form when I signed up to play disc golf. I knew I was cool by the rules as they existed at the time. So I just started playing in the women's divisions and nobody, not a soul, said boo about it, like for 6 years. I mean, there was this one dude in the local club who's...
There's always one, right?
Yeah, he's kind of a hater. And he like got a hold of some documents he should not have been legally allowed to get a hold of and doxed me to like everybody behind my back.
Oh no.
But like nobody came and told me about it. So I literally don't know if that had any effect on anything at all. Because if you meet somebody for the first time and they're kind of a butthole to you, is it because they didn't like your face, or maybe they're just a butthole themselves, or maybe they're having a bad day, or, you know, maybe somebody yelled at them on the drive over and now they're road raging.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or somebody doxed you and, you know, told all of your old life info to them and they're totally against that. I'm not a telepath. So if I just meet somebody for the first time and they're like, you know, I don't know why they're doing that. So I can't assume it's because they're a hater.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I, you know, maybe that happened a couple of times in the first 6 years. Maybe it didn't. I literally have no way, epistemologically speaking, to say for sure. So right. I'm just going to call that a big no. But the whole time I'd been playing disc golf, those first 6 years were just like some kind of ideal experience, utterly mind-blowing. I made more friends and better friends and longer lasting friends in the first 6 years of playing disc golf than I had in like the first 30, 40 years of my life combined.
Right.
And, that's amazing.
And, you know, and you know, making friends as an adult is hard. So the quality and quantity of good and enduring friends I was making was really blowing my mind in a good way. So I was a huge supporter of the social scene in disc golf. And then the way it's changed in the last year and a half, it's just like, I don't know, man, it's like the floor dropping out, or like that sudden cold wind of betrayal that suddenly blows through you. It's like, whoa, what is happening here? So and
it's like if the PDGA like grew boobs or something, you'd be like, something's different here.
And the new policy wasn't the beginning of it, it goes back farther, because mm-hmm. you know, I mean, there have been other openly transgender players, Kelly Jenkins over on the East Coast, for just as one example, and nobody really much cared about the trans issue for years and years and years, and then one day one of us started winning really big, and I'm not her. You know, back to backs at FP50 is not winning big. I am so sorry.
No, it is though.
yeah, but nobody gives a shit about Masters. But over on the DGPT side, there was this big win. And suddenly people were finding out that their tolerance for transgender women didn't go as far as they thought it did, or they weren't as good at allies as they might have imagined they were. Because, you know, it's like, yeah, cool, you can play with us. And then one of us wins, and they're like, oh, wait, but not like that.
Yeah, we didn't want you to win.
And it's like, so, and so, and, you know, so there's like a little bit of backlash against, you know, notching a W when I guess we weren't supposed to. And there's also just this external culture war that's been ramped up in the last couple of years. And we could do a 2-hour show just about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I'm going to slow down and let y'all talk a little.
No, we're here to listen. And, you know, we're, I don't know, two, you know, cis, male, gendered, white. We don't scream discrimination as, you know, we haven't really experienced it. So, as, like, for me in particular, I don't, there's no way I can understand what it even feels like. So, no, we need to listen. And I feel like this is really important for our listeners as well, to kind of like, you're not a fucking scary monster. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's like the fucking mindset right now, is that you're not a fucking person. You're like a fucking monster. It's like, fuck that noise.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Sorry. Just had to establish that real quick.
Oh no. Cause no, that's actually a really good point, because like, I look at like some of the terminally online stuff that is going around, like on Facebook. I do keep an eye on what my enemies are up to, because I want to know the state of the discourse or at what angle they're going to be coming at me next.
Absolutely.
And it's really ridiculous, because it's not just, they're not just like sitting there like a bunch of serious colonels at a war room table, like strategizing, you know, like, how are we going to attack this issue and what's the best strategy? You know, they're just memeing at each other. You know, they're right. Sharing posts and they're pointing and laughing. But the thing of it is, when they try to make fun of me behind my back in their spaces, it's like, they're not really making fun of me, because they'll like say shit about me that ain't true. Right. Or, you know, or they'll exaggerate things, or they'll take stuff out of context. So it's like, they're building up this weird and, you know, deformed scarecrow.
Exactly.
And then they hang a sign around the scarecrow's neck that's like, Nova P. And then, you know, they light it on fire and they dance around it in a circle and they laugh and they point. And it's like, yeah, but y'all realize that's not me. You know, right. I can't even be mad, because it's like, you know, if they were like coming at me and making fun of me where I am for my actual shortcomings, well, then we'd have to, there'd be time to reflect and talk about it. But right. They're off on the weirdest
made up bullshit.
It's like, I'm just like a spectator. I'm just kind of sitting off at the side. Like, what are they doing?
Who raised these fucking people?
And how do you, well, more to the point, I feel sad for them, because it's like, think about it. What is it like to live a life where it's a normal everyday thing to like make fun of a minority for being a minority? And, you know, what is your brain? What is your personality? And, you know, nothing exists in a vacuum. If that's like a thing you do that shapes your personality and it shapes your outlook on life, but it also literally shapes your thoughts. And it's like, I feel like they're living in some kind of mental jail, or they're living in a smaller world where the horizon,
alternate reality. Yeah.
Yeah. They're living in a world where the horizon is only 20 feet away. And there's no wonder in their world, because everything is nearby and closed off. And then everything outside it is weird and scary. And this, like, let's make fun of it.
Right.
And there's a lot of really interesting ways to be. And there's a lot of really interesting stuff in this world. But if you just fear everything that's outside that 20-foot horizon and just make fun of it, then you're closing yourself off from the potential of knowing some incredible stuff or meeting some amazing people. And I just feel sad for them. I can't even hate them back. It wouldn't be right. It'd be like punching down, which
right.
I realize that's the tables are turned, but
as much as they deserve it's like, I feel the same way I don't think in a hateful way. It just doesn't come to my brain. So the idea that somebody just like lives within that is really difficult for me to even process.
Yeah, it's just kind of depressing because it represents a loss of human potential. Each of us in aggregate, or each of us individually, can contribute to humanity in the whole. And then some people, for whatever reason, just aren't bringing a lot. And I don't know, I feel like something happens to these people, something about the way they're raised or the culture, or something makes a person this way, and then we don't get their full potential. We get what we get. And I feel like if we could find a way to not make people end up this way, we'd have more better people.
Yeah, you're so right. Oh, okay, so how did the PDGA go from this? Because I had the same idea. It's this wonderful, inclusive community where you can be yourself. Eric and I used to skateboard, so we both transitioned into disc golf, and that became like our main thing, and we really communicated well through that, and have made a wonderful community around our, both of us have done that through disc golf. And it makes me wildly uncomfortable to even now participate in a PD, like that type of thing, because like I don't want to like show any type of like approval for that type of discriminatory behavior. So maybe, sorry, that was a totally long-winded question, but like when do you think it started? Like, not like what happened? Can you just like let the people know?
I legitimately don't know, because it took me by surprise. I think it took a lot of people of goodwill by surprise, this policy change. And I feel like for the longest time, and I'm going out on a limb here, I feel like for the longest time, disc golf was just in a very live and let live kind of way. And so it's easy to do the right thing when it's easy. So, there was no culture war going on. So transgender women weren't some kind of predator to be defended against. And transgender women weren't racking up elite series wins. So
I forgot, that slipped my mind. Yeah, that too.
So it was very easy to just be live and let live because there were no challenges in the space. But, and I think it made it really easy for people to get complacent and feel like disc golf was actively positive, when in fact, what I think it was more of sort of a indifferent and just going along with the flow. Because human beings, behaviorally speaking, we tend to follow the path of least resistance. And you can, but if you try to imagine that, imagine walking alongside a steep mountainside. And if you don't pay attention to where you're going, you'll just tend to drift downward. And next thing you know, you're down in the valley. And the same thing with behavior, whatever is sort of the easiest thing to do, that's what people generally tend to do. And this gets groups of people into trouble, because frequently doing the right thing is hard. And the path of least resistance is the other way. And so for a long time, the path of least resistance was just to go along with the status quo, because there weren't any challenges. Transgender people playing, sure, whatever. Don't even think about it, not a problem. And then you've got the external pressure of this culture war, and it can't stay external, because when people think a thing, and when they feel it, and when they believe it, it's with them all the time. People people don't go onto the disc golf course and be one kind of human and then go over to a political rally and be a different kind of person.
Right.
Whoever they are goes with them 24/7.
Yeah.
So attitudes were changing and transphobia was being whipped up in the broader culture. So right. Of course it was going to be on the increase in disc golf as well. And then suddenly there was a problem to be solved. I mean, spoilers, no, there wasn't, but that was the perception. And suddenly having transgender women doing well was a problem. Spoilers, no, it isn't. But and then we have what we perceive as being a positive and supportive organization that had actually just been coasting along, doing it the easy way, is mm-hmm. actually faced with a difficult decision of how do we do policy? How do we do what's right? How do we do what's fair? And it comes up and it runs up against a board of directors that is not stacked in favor of inclusion and against a PDGA that, frankly, as an organization, is not a well-oiled machine. And I'm going to sound like one of those old bee cranks who's been in disc golf for like 20 years, because it's like everybody that's been in disc golf for 20 years has some kind of fuck the PDGA story. And I know, because as soon as I started getting at disc golf, they all came to tell me, which I don't know, weird. It's like, there's this phenomenon. I'm just like, I'm starting to get pretty good at disc golf. Randy's getting up there, notching a couple of wins. And then all these really old guys start coming to me to tell me how terrible the PDGA is. And I'm like, dude, who are you? What is happening? But, and I don't want to turn into one of those. So that's not where I'm going with this, but I did some looking and it's like, yeah, as nonprofits go, the PDGA is not as agile as a better structured organization could be. And I think that's because the sport has grown exponentially in the last couple of years. And yet
the organization hasn't grown with it.
Well, and the organization was built on an ethos of volunteerism and sort of a low intensity level of effort. And suddenly things need to be really structured and very professional. And I think there's some whiplash here because the organization hasn't caught up to the demands of the modern social environment and the number of people who are involved in disc golf, as well as just sort of the turbocharging of everything that terminally online social media people can create. Because, you know, ideas come up, spread virally, get shared around as memes, and, you know, way faster than the PDGA can even react.
Right.
So I don't think the PDGA was ready for the trans issue, and I'm let down and disappointed, but in the end, not super surprised that they fumbled the ball.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. It sucks that they showed their true colors so clearly, but also, like, now you know fucking what they're thinking, at least, I guess.
Well, and not the whole board. You know, I'd like to point out in November when they voted on this policy, it was a 4-3 split.
Okay.
Yeah, this was not a slam dunk issue. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much the president of the board sets the agenda, but I know the president of the PDGA is definitely not an LGBT ally. Yeah.
That's clear.
I mean, maybe in the edit we can put up some of those screenshots from Facebook.
Right. Yeah. Oh, one thing too. I just remembered. Sorry. I loved on your I don't know if it was your most recent video or your second most recent video that it's a big deal. You've been experiencing discrimination for a very long time, This is not anything new, and you will be just fine. But it does suck, and you weren't expecting it. So it's like, I thought you guys were kind of, you know, we're on the same
team,
or, you know, or thought we were friends here. What the fuck? Like,
right? Yeah, that's
yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I had grown pretty accustomed to institutions of all sorts just sort of letting me down again and again, and I got a little complacent myself. I'm gonna put it out there. I thought disc golf was gonna be better than this, so I kind of set myself up for a fall on this one.
I'm right there with you. I was so surprised. It was just, to come down on the side of discrimination is just like insane to me, as an organization. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
Right. And the weird thing is, like, if you go back to their announcement post and then like the policy post and read what they wrote, it's like, you know, there's a paragraph of introduction and then there's three or four paragraphs of why we're going to do the horrible thing we're about to do. And then the last paragraph is like this self-congratulatory backpatting disclaimer kind of paragraph where they try to reel it back in, but not really, where they're like, oh, but that aside, we'd like to remind you that the PDGA does not support discrimination, you know, for sex or gender or disability status or veteran status or age or, you know, all the various classes in any way.
Pat that back.
So, yeah. So we are totally on your side, and also get out. You know, it's like, oh, come on. It's like, pick one.
Like, you were so close.
You were so close to getting it. It's like, we abhor discrimination. Well, you can't put a statement like that at the end of a discriminatory policy. You know, it's like running naked down the street, waving a washcloth in front of your genitals, going, you can't, no, don't look at that. It's like, I'm so sorry. You're still streaking. You know, you're running full tilt. The wind's blowing. That little washcloth ain't doing the trick. I'm sorry.
You can see everything.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So do you quickly want to just touch on how the policy has affected you and your competing ability to compete?
Yeah, absolutely. I recently ran the gauntlet of medical tests to get back into the PDGA's good graces as a part-time female. So, well, sorry, didn't mean to kill you there.
Oh, that's just so fucked, God.
Thank you.
But you're not fucking a person now? Not a person now. It's like, fuck that noise. Sorry, I just had to go ahead. I can say that for you.
No, it's cool. It's like I should be doing that cabaret act where the person is like female on one side and male on the other, depending on which way they're facing. Yeah. You know, but it's in practical terms, I'm kicked off the tour. I am not eligible to compete in any DGPT event, and that includes the Silver Series. And the reason for that is, even though I completed transition 20 years ago, and even though I've successfully passed a blood test, in fact, it's at the floor of the normal, the typical female range. Because I did not have the good sense to begin my transition when I was around 12 years old in 1982, I am permanently barred from competing in DGPT, DGPT Silver Series, and FPO majors, which oddly opens this weird loophole, because basically I can play FPO C tiers, B tiers, A tiers, and I can play FP40, FP50 at any tier. So, you know, Pro Masters Worlds, FP50, yeah, I'm in. But and the shame of that is, first off, being banned from any tournament sucks, but being banned from the DGPT hurts especially badly, because I was placing in the bottom third because I'm not actually that good at disc golf. So I was bringing money and throwing it into the pot and donating it to the kids, you know, that the FPO players who are 18, 20, 30, even 40, you know, they were, you know, like Owen Scoggins or Sarah Hokum coming up here real soon. You know, these are all players who are getting in the cash, and the cash they're getting in is my cash. I'm bringing the cash and giving it to them. And, and all I'm getting it out of it is, you know, maybe a 1 in 1,000 chance of being on video if I do something amazing, or the chance to play disc golf with the best at the nearby events. You know, when the traveling circus, when the tour comes within a 500-mile radius of my home, I hop on, and as they're disappearing across the horizon, I hop back off because I don't go that far. But I'm losing the chance to compete in these elite series events and test my skills against the best. And, you know, if a tip-top touring pro has a bad day and I have a fire day, they might only beat me by 1 or 2, and that feels pretty good. But also the way the tournaments are run, I mean, all credit to the DGPT, terrible thing that they just did aside, they run a tight show. The tournaments are top notch. The environment for the players is astonishing. It is the best experience I have playing disc golf, is playing at these tournaments. And now I don't get to play. I can't come play. I can't have this experience. I can't donate money to the better pros. And it's got me gutted.
That's your community. Friends.
And because like, they tour, you know, they don't live near me. They're not my homies from, you know, Bartlett Park, and, you know, 2 miles away. I only see them at these tournaments. And, you know, so now I'm basically not going to see them. That is one of the ways the policy changes affected me. There's others.
Absolutely fucked. I'm so sorry that you have to go through this. I have to say that one time. I shouldn't say it again, but that it's not
your fault.
I know, but like,
I appreciate the sympathy.
Yeah, it's more of like, I'm sorry that you have to go through this, more or less. I know it's not my fault in particular. Yeah, no, I'm the commissioner. No, fuck that. yeah, no, I've never felt that type of discrimination before. So, and I don't think a lot of our listeners probably have either. It's mostly males. Not all of them. We have a pretty good percentage of female.
Well, you know, welcome to disc golf. I mean, it is, it's a sausage party. It's 93% male by membership in the PDGA. And that's not a stat that's changed. I look at the stats every year in the annual demographic report. And regardless of what the women's committee is doing, it's 7% female year after year after year.
That's really interesting, actually. I thought that it would have evened out like at least a little bit. In our like explosion of the sport. That's so fucking weird.
I can't account for it.
Guys are just not dragging out.
Well, I don't think that that's a successful method for recruitment. I think that tends to breed resentment. I've seen so many husbands or boyfriends bring their girlfriend or spouse, and the retention rate is not great. There's a variety of reasons for that. And that's a whole nother show.
Yeah, that's a completely way too long of a tangent.
Yeah, I mean, talking about this policy and how it's affected me, it has literally just cost me money. Because in order to play in women's divisions at all, I had to go get a blood test. And for people who aren't in the habit of having their blood tested, let's just walk through it, because, you know, do you go to the blood testing place? How does that work? Right. Yeah. It's a weird concept. So I had to like ring up my doctor on the phone, and I'm like, and she's a specialist in transgender women's health, and I don't have to go to her, but I got real tired of, you know, my previous doctor calling me sir. So I was like, fuck it. He's fired. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like the quickest like turn. Oh, I'm out of this. Nice to meet you. Bye.
Yeah, I don't care how good you are at helping me with my sinus infection. That's a deal breaker.
Yeah.
But
Jesus.
So I had to call her up, and you know, and she's been treating transgender women and advising them in their health for like decades and decades. And it's not the only thing she does, but she has made a specialty of this. And I had to explain this to her. And even over the phone, I could hear her face palming. She's just like, really? I got to do what? And I was like, yeah, I know, it's terrible, will you? And she's like, yeah, I'll help you out. So I got to drive to see my doc. You know, I got to make an appointment. So it's an office visit. So It's an office visit to a doctor, and it's not an annual checkup, which means insurance.
Not covered.
That's not the free one, you know, and even that insurance is kind of hard to get nowadays, but that's another story.
It's ridiculous.
A couple years ago, you used to be able to get checkups. Remember those? Anyway, but it's not that. It's an office visit. So I got to pay for the office visit. And at the office visit, you know, somebody's got to draw blood out of my arm and put it in a little vial, and that costs money. That's an upcharge. And then they courier it over to a lab, and the lab, you know, does what they do to measure the percentage of testosterone. And that's one of those ones where the lab mails a bill straight to my home. So, you know, if you have anything more complicated than, you know, a twisted ankle, you're getting bills from three different directions. That's just medicine in America, you know that. So I'll have the office visit and the blood draw bill coming from my doctor, and the lab test bill coming from Quest Diagnostics. And all told, it looks like I'm going to be out, but probably between $200 and $300 bills, $200-$300 to do this. And this is not really medically necessary, you know. So finding for me a specialist wasn't easy. So it's an hour drive down and an hour drive back, and you know, gas ain't cheap anymore either. But yeah, we're talking a couple hours of my time.
Convenience of it all, because you're literally going to have a test for something that you don't produce.
Yeah, literally, so having the needle stuck in my arm, and ow, that hurts, and it's a creepy feeling. And then they draw the blood and they put it in a little vial, and I put the Band-Aid on, and I got the Band-Aid on my arm all day.
Right.
And I gotta pay a couple hundred bucks for this. And you know, it's a raging imposition, and it's like, as a transgender woman, you know, I'm already dealing with a lot of shit. So it's like, you know, society wants me to be a certain way, and they also kind of want to not see me, and they, you know, and I gotta, and society tries to police how we look and where we go to the bathroom and this and that. And it's like, I'm given. And then the PDGA is like coming along, and they're like, oh, hey, we want some of your blood, and you're going to pay for the experience. It's like, what? It's like, you guys too? Really? Okay. So
everyone wants a piece.
Oh, they do. So it's literally costing me money. And the new policy, I don't care about that paragraph at the end of the policy and that paragraph at the end of the announcement where it says, oh yeah, the PDGA is still fuzzy, warm, inclusive. The policy has had the effect of turbocharging the anti-transgender contingent, because they got a little W, and so you give somebody a W, and they're going to feel good about it. And they're going to be like, what else can we win? And I have looked in on the spaces where like the anti-trans, no transgender and disc golf people hang out. Mm-hmm. And the day after the policy dropped, they were like, they had already stopped celebrating their W, and they were looking forward to the next one. They're like, this policy, it's kind of a W, but it's like a little one. We want the big W where transgender women are completely banned from the sport.
True story. Like, it's a baby step.
It is. It's like that saying, you know, you let a camel stick its nose in your tent, and then a minute later you got a camel in your tent.
Yeah.
Same thing. And to circle back to how I think the PDGA isn't especially well run, they managed to craft a policy that infuriated everyone, because the people who support transgender players are obviously mad because this is discriminatory. But the people who oppose transgender players were also mad because it didn't go far enough.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So the PDGA board, they kind of dialed up a lose-lose.
They pissed everyone off.
Yeah, so it's good job.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And then on top of all of that, you know, what the effect has been, you know, personally to me, it's damaged sort of the perception that disc golf is this inclusive, welcoming space, at least online.
Right.
Weird, true story, in person, like at disc golf tournaments, or even at like leagues and stuff, not one person has ever come up to me and said, hey, you shouldn't be here, or you shouldn't be in this division. It's never happened. It's only online, which speaks to the bravery of people, I think.
And say everyone's stuff online.
Yep, love to hide behind a screen.
Oh my God, so much stuff. But also, I have noticed that the anti-trans contingent, especially online, it's a handful of people, because I've got a couple of online spaces where anybody can come and comment. And on both of them, after I got some notoriety and they started coming to me, it was not that many bans before everything was quiet again. Mm-hmm. And one of them actually came back to me and apologized a couple of weeks ago, which tripped me out. And they said that they'd been in a really bad place and this was sort of their jam. And this helped numb the pain, I guess. But they also told me, here's a list of all the aliases I've been using to screw you over.
Whoa.
So I really think that the online opposition is a smaller group of people than what it seems like.
Right.
And that they're using alts. And and also they are so turbocharged on this issue. And this is something I want to talk about just a little bit, that they are omnipresent. They are terminally online. They'll be on Twitter, then they'll go to Facebook, then they'll be in YouTube comments, then they'll be in YouTube live chat or DGPT stream, and they will just be shitting up the place. And a person looking at that would be thinking, look at all of this hate. It's on all these different platforms, and it's so
all these different people. Yeah, it looks like different people. And
right. And then you ban about 12 people and suddenly there's silence. It's like, oh.
That was easy.
That's the weirdest thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and depending on the platform, sometimes it's easier or harder to roll an alt, you know. It's easier to make alts on like YouTube comments or
it's quite Twitter. Literally like a middle school bully mindset.
Oh, it is.
And they were completely given the green light by the PDGA to be hateful.
Right. Yeah. Because they, even though the PDGA, you know, makes a modicum of effort at removing comments online or moderating chat, it doesn't go far enough, in my opinion. It's still, if you let it through, or if you give them a policy win, it just turbocharges them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. If it would have been, I was looking at the US ultimate policy, I think.
Yeah.
Where it's just, if you feel like you would like, or if you're more comfortable participating in female, do that.
It's like night and day. Ultimate podcast called Share the Air just had me on a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know much about Ultimate, so I did my research. I read up on Ultimate as much as I could. I watched some videos of some matches, watched some top 10 videos of amazing plays. Read their lingo, because their lingo is crazy. And did all my research, and then I started looking into like how they handle it, and yeah, it's like night and day. Like over on the Ultimate side, you know, they're like trying to figure out like, well, what do we do with non-binary people? And they're like attacking it in an intelligent and thoughtful way. The issue, I mean, you know, they're right, coming at the people. It. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, I'm sorry if your pronouns are it. I didn't just attack you. I gotta make sure I'm not a,
no, you're good.
Yeah, I don't want to do anything by accident. Right. No, NBs, you're valid. I support you. But yeah, it's like over on the ultimate side, they're just like, yeah, whatever division you are. And we're going to try and sort out the NB thing. And then I look over at disc golf, and disc golf is like, there are men and there are women. And then there are sometimes women. And I was like, oh my God, what are you doing? It's like a different era. When I was doing my ultimate research, it's like I was visiting the universe of Star Trek. I was just like, oh, this is what the future looks like. This is so cool. Like, now I got to go back to disc golf.
Oh, that hurts my soul. I wish they would have not done this. That's just so fucked up. Oh, right? My gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. All they had to do was not that. It would have been so easy. I mean, and let's, you know, the policy as it existed in the early part of 2022, it wasn't perfect. Let's make no mistake in that regard. But it wasn't this.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Eric, if you want to go ahead. That was amazing.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You're doing so great.
Oh, well, I've gotten a lot of practice over the last couple of weeks.
Right.
I've done more podcasts and video shows in the last month than I had in the rest of my career.
Oh my gosh.
And I think that's because nobody else wants to talk about it. And
yeah,
legitimate. I can see both sides of the equation. On the one hand, if you're sort of a lukewarm ally, but you kind of want to be for all people and you want everybody to keep buying your discs, keep your mouth shut. I get it.
It's money. It's a lot, yeah. Money, yeah, is motivation for so many people.
Well, yeah, there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, but here we are. I'm a filthy lefty.
Struck a chord there.
Yeah. But I get where some players, you know, if they're just sort of lukewarm on the issue, they don't want to make waves or they don't want to jeopardize a relationship, or maybe this isn't something they think about a lot, so they're intimidated by the thought of accidentally coming down on the wrong side or doing allyship wrong because they don't know how to do it yet. And so they're just sitting back and sort of letting it play out. And I don't want to say I respect that, but I get where that's coming from. And then I'm sure there are players who are anti. I mean, there are a few who are vocally anti, and there are doubtlessly there are more who, you know, keep that to themselves. And, you know, whether that is the fear of being canceled, which is ridiculous. Hence the massive sarcasm quotes. You could, if you're listening to the podcast,
if you're just listening, big quotes.
Yeah,
I think you laid it on thick in your voice. If they could,
yeah, I think they got it.
But also, where was I going with that? You know, there's this. I think there is some self-awareness on the anti side that they may not win the fight. They may not win the war. You know, they might have got a W in this battle, but they may not be winning the war. And I have a feeling there are some people who are on the anti side who don't want to commit that on, you know, to a permanent recording, whether it's an online post, you know, a TikTok, an Insta post.
But behind closed doors.
Yeah, yeah.
They're making the votes and pushing.
Yeah,
but
they're a little bit concerned about how they're going to look in the rearview mirror of history. So I think there is some self-awareness of that. So,
which is terrible. It makes them sneaky.
Yeah, but as a result, it means that despite, you know, the utter depravity of this new policy and how terrible it is, aside from a couple of articles in the first week, it's mostly been deafening silence, you know, for like the last 2 months. Nobody is coming out and having anything to say about it. You know, when anybody does any kind of an interview on any show or podcast, if they're not trans, they're not talking about it. And among the people of bad will, I'm okay with them holding their tongue. But among the people of goodwill, I confess to being a little bit disappointed in the moderate who remains silent.
Not more outrage. Like that's kind of what I was thinking too. And that's actually why we ended up reaching out more towards, because actually I had a little random question that popped in my head. If you're ready,
do it.
Did you have any, either behind closed doors or openly, did you have any support from any of the other players or friends within the tour?
No. Among named players, anyone that you've seen on coverage or whatever, and it's been a long 2 months, so if one or two people did reach out to me, I am so sorry, I don't remember, because I'm about to offend you. I really don't remember any big gestures like that in the last couple of months. However, I have sort of a self-curated, you know, group of people who I stay close to online. And because I curated that group, obviously they're all in my corner on this. And they've been absolutely wonderful. And nobody has gone rogue or gone turncoat on me. So I got that going for me.
That's good. I'm glad you have a good support, but that's beyond that. It's a slap from the PDGA. It's also kind of a slap from all of these people who have been presenting as caring, inclusive.
Well, I think that gets back to the path of least resistance, though.
So
doing
nothing is so easy.
Well, yeah. And it is really hard to take a principled stand when things that matter are actually on the line. It's easy to have principles when things are easy, because then you can just be like, I think this, and I think we should do this, but that's what everybody was already doing, so who cares? But then when times get tough, and standing up for your principles means making some kind of sacrifice, that's when you find out how much somebody is willing to go to the wall for their principles. And for a lot of people, they seek the path of least resistance. And the answer to that question is not very far. And I don't have the answer for that. That's just human nature. I don't know if it's how I was raised or if it's the culture or the environment or just hard lessons I've learned over my life. I am principled to a fault, and I will hurt myself with my principles. And I mean, it's not to the point that it's a suicide pact,
no,
you know,
but
you know, if the ethical thing is to unalive myself, I'll probably betray that principle. I'm not a fool, but
right.
I do tend to bring a lot of fire down on myself by being unwilling to back down from a principle.
But in this particular case, it's just that you're a person. like that's just, fuck. I hate. I'll say it for you. Fuck the PDGA.
I neither endorse nor condemn this statement.
Yes, that definitely you. That's 100% my opinion.
I can't say anything about that right now. Sorry.
No, you're so
no okay. Problem.
Yeah, that's 100% just me.
So why don't you just let us in the audience know what we can do to help, other than being more vocal and more obviously supportive and stand by our principles.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, this I'm going to say the boring thing first and the interesting thing second. The boring thing is vote in the PDGA Board of Directors election this coming July. The whole board doesn't rotate with every election. It's on a staggered system so that you don't have a whole class of rookies come in one year. Because although legitimately, that might not be the worst thing in the world at this rate. but
clean slate.
I mean, there are people who are already, you know, throwing their hat in the ring for the board of directors because they want to influence this policy one way or the other. So when the board of when you get that email at the very beginning of July, if you're still even a member of the PDGA at this point, and if you're not, I respect that decision. If you are in fact a member of the PDGA at the beginning of July, when you get that email about the board of directors, do vote. And I'm not sure who's up on the rotation for potentially being removed this year if they don't do well in the election. But I would like to point out that Jeff, Wilbur, David, and Nate are the four who voted to ban transgender players. And Conrad, Laura, and Leah voted against the ban. So let that be your guide. However,
I think we reached out to Laura. I think Laura was one of the people that we reached out to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, that's a good aside. And I'm not 100% sure what's going on at the board of directors, but aside from one Q&A article they did with Ulta World about 3 days after the policy was announced, they have been keeping a lid.
Not a single thing has come out.
No, their message control is eerily effective because other policies, other sorts of decisions, you know, members of the board, you know, they'll have all kinds of things to say. Well, I felt this way, I felt that way, you know. But on this one issue, they really seem to have got the message control on lock. And I don't know what's going on. I can only look at the lack of information and try to draw a conclusion from that. And golly, that's a little weird. But that's the easy thing, and that's the boring thing, vote.
Thank you. That's very, very helpful.
Oh, well, thank you. And fortunately, you know, the PDGA hasn't been gerrymandered yet, so you know, your vote still counts. I can't
give,
even wait
to give it time.
What would that look like? But it's coming. It's coming.
They'll figure it out.
You know, you know how like local school board elections get really wacky with like these fringe candidates who are hyper-focused on one thing and then they get voted on because who votes in school board elections? I mean, seriously. And then next thing you know, your school board is doing insane things and you're like, how did we get here? That's coming to the PDGA. We are gonna have that kind of crazy school board candidate coming to the PDGA trying to get on the board in this July's election. So read the statements from the candidates and vet them and understand who stands where. And if somebody's coming off as kind of a fringe one issue candidate, that might be a little bit of a red flag to you that they're not really super interested in doing good governance. And they are super interested in doing this one thing.
Yep. That's all they care about.
Yeah. And maybe don't let people who are like into that one thing onto the board because they're probably not going to be good at doing the rest of disc golf. And the sport's growing and we need people who are good at all the disc golf, not just the one thing. So, okay, that's the easy thing and that's the boring thing. Now I'm going to tell you the hard thing. And I think the thing that's a little more interesting, and that is you got to moderate your communities and you got to do that online and you got to do it offline. And we'll do online first. If you have a space where you have the ban hammer, or the ability to remove comments, you're responsible for the tone of that space. You curate your community. And if you don't take an active role in doing that, then the community that results from your inaction is every bit as much your problem as if you had curated it deliberately. So like, I don't know if either of y'all game, but you go online and it's not great. The slurs are flying and the 14-year-olds are doing what 14-year-olds do. And it's terrible. And it's because the gaming companies aren't moderating their space. And by not curating their community, they are in effect creating a different kind of community, and it's not a good one. Same thing, if you are responsible for a space online, I don't care what anybody tells you about their freeze peach. You don't owe people a platform. If somebody comes into your community and they're stinking up the place and they're making it negative, get rid of them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And
too sorry.
They can find their own community to do it.
Yeah. And that's the online half. But you also have to do it offline in real life. Mm-hmm. When you're going to your local league and you're just hanging out, and remember, disc golf is 93% guys. So when you're hanging out with the bros and somebody drops the T slur, they drop the up slur, or they drop the N bomb with the hard R, when they drop a slur in chat locally, you got to speak up and you got to moderate your community in real life. You got to be like, hey, I realize that there are no individuals of that particular persuasion standing around right now, and that you feel like it's okay to say that word because you feel like you're surrounded by like-minded people because we all kind of look like you. But with me, that shit don't fly. Mm-hmm. Don't do that around me, because we can't, if you keep that up, we can't be friends if that's the kind of person you're going to be. Do strike first. I'll play disc golf with you, but I'm not your bro and I'm not your friend if that's how you're going to be. Mm-hmm. So, if you want to keep it on the we're kind of strangers level, that's going to be the result of your actions. But if you drop that stuff and you don't say those words and you don't act that way and you don't act the fool around me, then we can be a little better friends. We can be a little friendlier. We can be chattier. I'll share my snacks with you. But, it's not easy, because if you're the first one to speak up, you run the risk of being the downer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the downer is the person who dropped the slur first.
Mm-hmm.
They've already broken the peace by doing that, and they are testing the group to see if that's going to fly. And if nobody speaks up, then that's the community you get. So yeah, moderate your communities online, but moderate your communities in person too.
Just to add on to what you're saying, I feel like a lot of people would just be silent,
at the least resistance.
Yes. And think that that's better than trying to causing friction or
right.
But it's just it's going back to that again too, standing with your principles.
Well, and the people who don't want to make waves, they're missing a very important point. That is, if the person who's making waves is the person who drops a slur in chat or who says something terrible like that, they have created a bad situation. And saying, hey, don't do that, it might feel like an escalation of the fight or a continuation of the fight, but really it's an attempt to put the fire out.
Right.
And in the short term, that does make a little bit more noise.
Right.
But
in the long term, then that
in the long term, it's been stopped, and it's hopefully not gonna happen again. There's two examples I can give of this. There's a famous Twitter thread where this guy's sitting in a crust punk bar, and it's the kind of place where the bartender hates everybody. And he's just trying to drink his beer, and the bartender is ignoring him, and he's ignoring the bartender. And this guy in a leather vest comes in and sits down at the bar and puts a couple dollars on the bar. And the bartender kind of looks at the guy and he's like, no, out, just get out. And the dude's like, what? I just sat down. I said, no, out. And the dude leaves. And the guy, the author, says to the bartender, like, well, what was that about, man? And the bartender's like, you know, you couldn't see it from where you were sitting, but, you know, the guy's biker vest was all full of Aryan patches or racist stuff. You know, and you know, he was a Nazi biker. And he's like, and here's the situation. When you get your first Nazi biker in your bar, you got to kick him out. Because if you just let him buy a beer, the next time he's going to come back with a buddy. And then he's going to come back with two buddies. Yep. And then your regulars are going to see these Nazi bikers hanging around and they're going to start drifting away. And one day you're going to wake up and realize you own a Nazi bar. And at this point, you can't kick them out because they're the majority of the customers. And if you try to kick them out, it's going to be a huge deal. So you got to snuff that out like as soon as you see it.
Early.
And to the person who's sitting there, you know, somebody comes in and sits down and they got the Nazi patches on and the bartender's like, no, get out. That feels like a confrontation, but that's nowhere near the confrontation that is going to come in the future.
Yes.
And the other thing, there was this really famous civil rights guy that some people might have heard of, Dr. Martin Luther King. Letter from a Birmingham
once or twice.
Yeah, letter from a Birmingham jail. The paragraph that gets quoted the most is that he expresses his disappointment with, and you know, and this is civil rights, so with the white moderate who prefers the false peace of people just kind of suffering injustice quietly to the noise of people getting their due, to getting their just rights. And the moderates who prefer that kind of tranquility are, you know, they're prolonging the injustice. So, you know,
making it worse.
And they're making it worse. They're, you know, so yeah, don't be that moderate. And don't be that person who values the false peace of this live and let live, because if someone's dropping slurs, you know, that's not peace. You know, you have a bad situation already. And the thing of it is, not every attribute that a person might be bigoted against is visible.
So true.
You know, you don't know that your friend, you know, he might be a bi guy. And, you know, somebody starts dropping the F slur in chat, you know, the bi guy might just stop coming to your disc golf and you don't know why.
Right.
And because when people drift away like that, they don't fill out an exit survey, you know, they just go play Ultimate or something.
Oh my God.
So you gotta moderate your communities, you know, TLDR, you gotta moderate your communities.
So vote, moderate, and stand by your principles, like in that moderation as well.
And if you got a transgender friend, yeah, reach out to them on Facebook and say hi and tell them you're thinking about them.
Yeah.
And that's something everybody should do with everybody. There was just a study published the other day that's just like reaching out to like one old friend once a week just to check up and say, hey, how you doing? Like boosts both people's moods phenomenally for like a long time. So if there's somebody if you got an old friend you haven't said hi to in a while, just reach in out of the blue and just be like, hey, how's it going? Thinking about you. What's up with your life? And spend a minute. The dividends are going to be huge. And it's wholesome.
Right.
I feel like
it was very wholesome.
Yeah. Right. We have a lot of the same concepts, I think. Also, I wanted to just touch on, there are so many parallels between like the civil rights movement and the current discrimination that trans people are facing.
Absolutely. It's the same playbook.
It is. I feel like they almost like, that's just what they're doing. They're looking in the past. Mm-hmm. They're like, ah, how can we screw these people over?
Well, and the thing of it is, and who the people are is immaterial. What it's really about is, you have to come up with an outside group, invent a way that they are a threat to your women or children, and then be and you, it's like you're not against that group, you're protecting your children, or you're protecting your women. You go back to the, you know, post Civil War, all the way through the Jim Crow era, it was racism, and it was white men protecting their daughters and protecting their wives from the imagined threat of black men. And then you go to like gay people, and you look at like some old videos and propaganda videos really from like the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
And you got to protect your children from the gay men. And
it's creating monsters.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, what's old is new again. That's the groomer thing that you've been hearing about. That's back. And now with transgender people, we have to protect women from, and I'm going to quote them because I don't think what they think. You know, you have to protect women from these invading men. You know, so it's like, you know, transgender women want to go in women's bathrooms. So it's like these men are going into your bathroom, or these right. men want to take away our daughter's scholarships for sports, or, you know, we have to protect our wives and girlfriends from men, because, you know, they're missing the point that transgender women are women. So yeah, there's a group that they very patronizingly want to protect
right.
against an outside group who is demonized. And by framing it as we're defending such and such, to the casual observer, it appears that they're taking the moral high ground. We're protecting. How can right. protecting be a bad thing?
Like, how could we be wrong? I wanted to just say thank you. I think this is like, just being on a show like this can help dispel that thought of like, you're not a monster, you're a person.
It's thank you.
And like, what, like, and then that's like, oh, that's the most revolutionary thing I've ever said in my life.
Smash the system. Trans women are women. Don't be scared of people.
It's just the mindset is just it's ridiculous to me. But thank you again. I think that you are, just by doing this, just so helpful to any person going through these type of things too. So
I've got some feedback on that.
Yeah,
because I didn't, you know, like I'd said at the beginning of the show, I was sort of not publicly trans for a right. long time. It was at the beginning of 2022, the middle of January, when the political rhetoric was being dialed up with regards to transgender people in general and trans women in sports in particular.
Right.
So after about 2 decades of comfortably being unrevealed, I was like, you know what? Let's just put a video out there. So I put out this video on my channel, also on my Facebook feed. Some people are transgender and that's fine. And I was like, hey, everybody, I'm transgender and nothing's going to change. Okay, peace out. It was a really short video.
Yeah.
And, but just in this, over the course of this year and seemingly out of nowhere, like every couple of weeks, I would just have these incredible experiences where somebody would be like, hey, not, you know, I'm a little bit into disc golf, play it with my family and all. And I have a non-binary child or a transgender sibling, or my friends at my club back in this town are trans. And I want to tell you that they're huge fans of yours and that what you're doing matters. And I was not expecting that to happen. And at US Women's, somebody came over to me and they're like, we have 2 transgender players back home and they know you're here. And we're gonna run to the disc golf store across the street from the course and buy some MVP discs. And can you sign them and send them back? Cause they're huge fans. And I'm
that's
like,
so
yeah.
nice.
I was like, oh, okay, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause I don't know.
It's so important. It really is.
Yeah. Apparently
there's not a lot of represent. Yeah. That type of like the figures in the mainstream that
right can apparently see that matters
themselves.
And that was kind of why I came out, I guess, as trans. As you know, I mean, even though I'd done it all 20 years ago, I just came out anew, just be like, hey, this is normal, everybody, it's cool,
right?
And I thought, well, maybe there's like one disc golfer out there somewhere who will see that and they'll be inspired and they'll feel a little better about themselves, and that's good enough. And then it's just like, it, you know, it, the good hits kept coming, and I was just like, wow, this is startlingly effective. And then of course the board did what they did in December, and suddenly it's like, oh man, I don't know if I want to be out now.
Oh fuck.
But you know, well, it is what it is, I guess, you know.
It is.
I signed up to be an inspiration. I didn't sign up to be a warrior.
Oh fuck. Anyway. Yeah,
you're take your time.
Yeah, it's I just think you're great. I think you're doing great, and keep on doing what you're doing. Yeah.
Well, I can't not unless I quit.
I know, but like, I just think you're a great role model for the community. So.
Oh well, thank you very much, and I think you're great for helping amplify my voice.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Oh no,
everybody listens.
Well, yeah, you guys are doing great. There's some shows I go on where it's like I'm way, you know, there's like different levels of discourse. There's been some shows where I go on and I'm like, all right, let's start at the beginning. This is what a transgender person is.
Right.
Wait, let's lay a little groundwork here. And then there's other shows where I come in and I'm just like, you know, yeah, intersectional femininity, you know, you got to worry about, you know, your overlapping degrees of privilege. And the hosts are like, yeah, we're on. It's like, okay. And it's like, you know, no, I get the vibe from y'all that this is the show where I can just come in, like, you know, talking about the 2000 or 3000 level courses and we can skip the 101.
Yeah. You got it. and hopefully, you know, if you don't know what a transgender, you know what I mean? Like, go Google it. Google it. Do your own fucking research.
Yeah. God. I mean, I'm willing to help out when I've got the time. You know, I feel like if there's a question that, you know, people need answered, and it's, you know, any of their business. And yeah, and if it's any of their friggin' business, you know, I absolutely bring it to me, you know. But yeah, if you're just thinking about transgender people in general, yeah, just go online. And and legitimately, you know, and you know, vet your sources. You know, if somebody seems really mad about it, you know, they might not be your best source. And that goes on either way, you know. And I don't want to do both sides are bad. I'm just saying there's a lot of rage bait out there on the internet. You know, if somebody's trying to engage your amygdala and get you mad, they might not be your friend. You know, they might be short circuiting the thinky parts of your brain and trying to get into the reaction parts of your brain.
That lizard brain we all have deep
down.
Oh
my God. Oh yeah. And that's like a crack hit, you know, that's how engagement works online, is the stuff that makes you mad keeps you coming back for more.
And the algorithm pushes it.
Oh, absolutely it does. I don't know the fix for that because I'm not an online smarty pants, but but I can see it happening.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that was amazing.
I got a great question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Outside of this policy change, what is your worst or most memorable oh no moment on tour? In the spirit of the show.
Okay, yeah.
We have to know.
Oh no.
Yeah, right. I was saying oh fuck every time I hit a tree, and I had to switch it up, so we switched it to oh no.
Okay, that's cool. I'm gonna cheat. I got two. The first oh no is tangentially related to the policy change, so sorry.
It's okay.
And that is after the election of the board and the two particularly anti-transgender one issue candidates did not make the vote and they did not get on the board. I was like, okay, cool. Let's settle down and get back to disc golf. And then the board of directors pushes out this survey on the issue to all the players. And I was like, oh no.
Oh yeah.
because it's like they want another swing at it. They want another ticket. Yeah. You know, it's like they didn't get the board stacked. So now they're going to put a survey out there. And I don't know if you know this, but surveys about minorities aren't a good way to make policy for minorities, because by definition, there are fewer people in a minority. So if you have a vote, they don't get as many votes.
Like, what did you think was going to happen?
You know, it's like if you got 19 wolves and one sheep and you put out a survey about who's for dinner.
You can guess who.
Okay, so that was my first one. No, as soon as I saw that poll come out, I was just like, oh no, they're doing it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because I mean, like, let's look at interracial marriage. Loving versus Virginia, Supreme Court case settled that on the good side in what, 1968, 1969? Actual public approval in polls of interracial marriage didn't creep above the 50% mark until the mid-1980s, you know, a couple decades later. So, yeah. So what would happen if Loving versus Virginia had been a poll?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, mm-hmm. So when they put out that poll, I was like, oh, no. The other oh, no moment, and this is on the course, it was my first tournament playing as a pro. It was a two rounder C tier one day, about three holes to play in the final round. And I'm only down by like one throw. I'm like so close to taking down my very first open win at my very first open tournament.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's against a local pro who's pretty good. And I'd sort of looked at her as like my role model, but also on the way up, you know, kind of paint targets on the backs of increasingly better and better players.
Right. You want to like, yeah, you like improve.
One day I'm going to take her down her. And then one day I'm going to catch her. And then one day I'm going to, yeah. So she was to be the first. And I was only one throw off. And it's late autumn. It's like November in Missouri. So the leaves are off the trees and they had been for a couple of months and they were good and crusty and brown. And this was 2015. So I was still throwing mixed bag. It wasn't sponsored yet. I'd only been thrown for 9 months. I'm not that much of a prodigy. And I had this Westside Discs Air Renegade. Okay. And if you know the Trilogy plastics, and this is before Halos and Bursts and Swirls and Chameleons and Shimmers, and oh my God, there's so many plastics now. Nice. You know, this is back when you had Opto Lucid and like Prime. No, Prime didn't exist yet. Prime didn't
exist
yet. Classic,
I think it was.
Yeah. There was the opaque stuff and the clear stuff.
Yep.
And then the baseline stuff for the putters, yeah. And the names were different depending on which company. But this is back when the Westside Discs, they were all these weird earth tones. They did not have any bright colors. There was no fire engine safety green or Hunter Blaze orange. So I had this orange disc that was kind of a burnt red, orange, autumn leaf color. And with three holes to play, I throw it on this massive blind downhill bomb where all the leaves collect at the bottom of the hill.
Oh.
Gone forever. Sorry. Spoiler.
Spoiler. Ruined it.
And you know, we stomped through those leaves for 3 minutes looking for that stupid disc. So, and I was like, oh no. And the thing of it was, with what I knew about who I was playing with, I had a reasonable chance of getting the other strokes back on the final two holes. So I was just like, get off this hole and we'll try to do good on 17 and 18. Yeah. And I had a lost disc penalty. And it was a small enough field that like the payout was only for first. It was like $225, which And I was like, that was a $225 loose Air Renegade. And
yeah.
So yeah, that's my Encore Sono.
Damn,
did you ever find it? Did you ever get it back?
No, it's gone.
Oh man.
Oh, it's the course.
You would think it would have been found at some place at some point. I wonder if somebody found it and has it now and has no idea that story that's involved with it.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Well, if you're that person, enjoy the disc.
Yeah, it was some OG plastic. That was way back when they were inkjetting the weight with that little dot matrix printer on the backs of the discs. So those are valuable now. So that $225 Renegade is probably worth a couple of bucks now.
Yeah. Even more so with the story.
Right. Yeah. So now what, if you would have been sponsored by MVP, what would you have thrown looking back now? What would have been your disc of choice
for that downhill
shot?
Oh my God. Well, I'd only been throwing for 9 months, so I was stupid. I didn't know what I was doing. let's see, given what I know about MVP. Oh, I probably would have done something really dumb, like try to throw, you know, like a neutron amp straight down this tunnel shot. And because I was a noodle arm, it would have faded out and gone in the leaves and I would have lost it too.
So same result.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I've played that course since then. Now I fire a neutron trace down the hill as hard as I can. It's perfect.
But
that does not help me back in 2015.
Nope. Can't take that back. Oh, shit. Was there anything that we kind of missed in any of the policy talk or anything that you want to make sure we touch on before we kind of continue?
Oh, I'm going to wake up at about 2 a.m. and realize the answer to that is yeah.
For sure. It happens a lot.
Oh, yeah.
We'll just have to have you back on.
Okay. Yeah. Legit. I can't really think of anything. I feel like we've covered everything I know. And we have avoided straying into the area of speculation, which is good because it's important not to say things that I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yes, that does remind me. Thinking about like the social environment at disc golf, like there'll be times where you get like a bad vibe off a player. And it used to be I'd get a bad vibe off a player and I'd be like, that's them. I don't know what's going on with their life. You know, give them the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
But ever since transgender women became controversial, it's so hard to avoid thinking negative things when somebody is like giving me side eye, or if there's like a group of players that are all hanging out and you know, and I'm going past, you know, going to the practice basket or going to load my car, coming or going, and they all get real quiet and they all just sort of swivel their heads in unison as I go by.
Rubberneck.
And then over my shoulder, I hear the conversation resume.
Mm-hmm.
That's a weird feeling. And that's only been ramped up like in the last year or so. I get the weird feeling that I'm a topic of conversation sometimes. And it's really unfortunate because it makes things awkward. So
it goes back to that. They gave the hate a win. So
yeah.
They can now conversate about hate.
And yeah. I was getting a little bit of that vibe hanging around in the Masters pools at like this most recent Pro Worlds. Like, you know, there were people who were genuinely happy to see me and they'd, you know, run over like, hey, Nova, long time, you know, whatever. But that whole, you know, that, you know, that's like the echo in the Bunnymen song, you know, people are strange when you're a stranger. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm feeling a little bit more like a stranger here now. And I'm actually deeply concerned about Masters Worlds and Flagstaff this coming July, because it's in the middle of July and the election season for this board election runs July 1st to July 31st. So whatever the rhetoric is going to be, it's going to be ramped up all through the month of July. And I'm going to be hanging around with a bunch of masters and grandmasters and old grandmasters players. And I hate to say this, but truth is, this is an issue that is divided on generational lines. And it's one of the reasons I kind of like being on the DGPT and playing in tour events is the kids are all right. They really are. The environment is so good. I mean, I'm 52 years old, so I'm a grandma compared to them. But, but the kids are all right. But, but I don't know. The people my age and the people older than my age, I don't get the best vibes. I'm feeling a little bit more like a stranger among people with whom I used to be a peer.
Right.
And
it's disproportionate.
And I think that's just part of the policy change and part of the culture war. And that's this is one of those circumstances where you got to moderate you got to moderate your community, and where you got to reach out to people. If you know somebody that's possibly affected by this, let them know that you think they're all right. Because when somebody is just silent, I don't know what they're thinking.
And or are you thinking that the silence is their statement? Silence can
it can communicate a lot, but I try so hard not to act like I know things that I don't know.
Yeah, assumptions are so difficult.
And, so this leads me by default to give people probably too much benefit of the doubt, but that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make in order to avoid not giving someone the benefit of the doubt.
You're strong enough to handle it, I think.
It has its moments, but I'll try.
You project the image of being able to handle it. That's all I meant.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, all right. That was good. Sorry, I keep saying that, but
I've watched your show for the last 20 episodes. When do we get to the fart jokes?
Those come on accident.
I feel like we forgot to do the fart jokes.
I don't think I ate the right food for dinner and lunch today to produce those. Speaking of, do you have a favorite snack on the course?
Yeah, I do. I load up my cart or my bag with grandma candy. I get those individual toffees or the coffee candies or those red and white swirly Starburst mints.
Oh, okay.
Any kind of candy that comes in little individual wrappers. Like if there's something like that in the hotel lobby, I'll grab a bunch of them and throw them in my bag.
Yeah.
When I go to the bank, I grab a bunch of the lollipops,
They're free.
Yeah. And I don't care what the mood is in a card. Even with touring pros, there's a moment where everybody's just kind of feeling everybody out, and it's a little bit game facey, and this player's got her earbuds in, and this player is just way more into her caddy than the rest of the group, and maybe it's the mix of players is not a group that's super accustomed to playing together. I bust out that grandma candy around hole three. Everything lightens up. It's like everybody's picking through it. They're like, "Oh, I want this one. I want that one." And it's an awesome icebreaker and a mood breaker because everybody's gangsta till the grandma candy comes out, and then they're just like, "Oh yeah."
It's my new favorite quote. Everyone's gangsta till the grandma candy comes out.
Oh my gosh, that's a good one.
That's awesome.
I love that.
And seriously, it's a human bonding thing, share food.
For sure. It's the smallest thing. Suddenly you have a friend.
Share your treats.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My other favorite snack is whatever the tournament provided. I walk up to like check in or the registration table, whatever they got sitting in that little bowl, that's my favorite snack. What is that, fig bar? Yeah, I love fig bars. Banana? Oh man, bananas are my jam. Fiber One bar? I'll have just one. Don't eat two Fiber One bars. That's all I'm saying.
Nope. Yeah, that'll be shit. That could cause issues for your round. That could be a whole nother oh no. Well, I think that's all kind of all the questions we have. Kyle, is there anything you want to touch on?
I think that we got to everything.
Can I
just honestly, I was just expecting most people to just ignore my message to even like talk with me. So I 100% appreciate you coming on the show. 100% appreciate you being such a wonderful person within not only just the trans community, but as a female professional sports person. I think that you're doing great, and I really do appreciate you coming on. I think that it'll be really helpful for other people, and I just thank you.
Well, thanks for taking a chance on me. It's not easy going out on a limb like that, so I super appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yep. You avoided the path of least resistance.
Yeah. The whole thing didn't sit well with me, so I was like, I have to do something. Let's do something.
Rock on. Can I do some shout-outs for social media links?
100%. Let us know where the people can follow you.
All right. Even though nobody should be on Facebook, and that includes me and you, I am on Facebook, facebook.com/BigSmoothDG, all one word, BigSmoothDG. It's long story. And and I throw up a video every couple of weeks on youtube.com/NovaPolite, my first name and my last name all run together. Or if you want to do the at thing on YouTube, it's just @NovaPolite. And if you want to figure out how to spell my name, look in the show notes.
Yo, perfect.
Yeah, that was great. Follow there. And Eric, get us on out of here.
Thank you so much again, Nova, for taking time out of your day to hang out with us. We very much appreciated it. It was awesome meeting you. And we will definitely be looking out to get you on again soon, hopefully under better circumstances.
It's been a delight. Maybe I'll come back if I can successfully get the 3X. We'll see how it goes.
There you go.
I got some tough competition coming this year. It's going to be hard.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you're up for it.
Right. Oh, and I wish you nothing but the best this year too. Any tournaments that you're doing, all the sports stuff. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not quitting. I'm just doing a lot more A tiers. Oh, and I'm gonna try and hit some of Callie McMoran's Disc Golf Masters Tour. That's an amazing thing she stepped up to do. So go, Callie. You're awesome.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that. I haven't.
Yeah, DGMT.
Really heard
about it. Oh, okay. Yeah. She took me by surprise. Just came out of nowhere with this full-fledged tour, just ready to go. Boom.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Now another thing to follow and watch for. Thank you.
Yeah. You betcha.
We will see everyone next week.
Yeah.
Oh, Kyle had something.
No, you're good. It's all good.
Okay.
All right. We'll catch you on the flip side, guys.
Thanks. Take care.